Yes, and welcome to Animal Voices. In this program, Animal Voices, we wish to celebrate the glory of the animal kingdom. And I believe that when people hear this message of understanding and realize how much we have in common with our kindred species, the animals, people will step out and speak out for the protection of our environment and the animals with whom we share this planet. I am convinced that we are only beginning to comprehend our fellow creatures. I don't believe that man is a superior animal, but is one amazing being among a world of many others. You are listening to Animal Voices, coming to you on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver, which is a non-commercial, cooperatively owned, listener-sponsored community radio station. Located in the heart of Vancouver downtown east side, Co-op Radio is a voice for the voiceless that strives to provide space for underrepresented and marginalized communities. Alan Jensen, thank you for being our technician. My name is Carl Oskin, and in the studio today we also have co-host Marge Adams. And Marge, what will you be doing today?
Well, I'm going to be speaking with Peter Fricker, one of my favorite guests on this show, and he is with the Vancouver Humane Society, and he is the program coordinator for that society. Peter will be telling us about a camp, a project they have going right now, and that's, I'll call it an anti-rodeo project that's been getting a lot of media attention, and it's really quite interesting.
Well, I'm just looking at the headlines of the Vancouver Sun on Wednesday, and it said here, and we'll hear more about this, it says the headline here, it says, Humane Society invokes Jesus in rodeo protest. So all compassionate people listen, and Peter Frick will be on pretty soon, within a few minutes. So in the second half of the program, we'll be speaking with Jerry Cook, who lives on the Outer Banks coast of North Carolina. He is the co-founder of the World Orchard Project, former board member of Earth Save International, a nutritional lecturer, musician, and storyteller. That's at the halfway mark. During this, we have some odd piece of news and everything, Marge. During this past week, the World Veterinarian Convention was held in Vancouver with some 2,000 veterinarians attending. So the World Society for the Protection of Animals, WSPA, WSPA, had a display booth and featured the long-distance transport of farm animals with a documentary which showed, among others, a cargo ship that loads 200,000 live sheep that are shipped from Australia to Lebanon. In Lebanon, sheep are loaded into the buyers' trunks of cars and on the roofs of their vehicles. This documentary also showed graphic pictures of animal transport in Brazil, goat transport in southern Africa, and also the transport of pigs from Lethbridge to Alberta, Alberta to Hawaii. This, the Vancouver-based Canadians for the Ethical Treatment of Food Animals, whose agenda is the inhumane treatment of food and farm animals, fielded volunteers to attend the booth. It was a great privilege for many of us to be there. Canada, so as far as the existing legislation is concerned, allows transport times among the longest in the industrialized world, legalized transport times. Cows can be transported up to 81 hours without food. Horses, pigs, and chickens can legally be transported up to 36 hours without water, food, or being unloaded for rest. Cows, sheep, goats can legally be transported for up to 52 hours without water or food or rest. Yes, we've repeated this before, and you know, it's worthwhile repeating because this has to be a winnable cause. And thank you for the World Society for Protection of Animals for coming to Vancouver and the Canada Place. Well, we have news from the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, and it is seizing the international spotlight of the Summer Olympics in Beijing to help animals by exposing the nightmarish conditions for dogs, cats, and other animals who are unlucky enough to be on Chinese fur farms.
Yes.
And China is one of the world's largest suppliers of animal fur. More than 95% of China's finished fur garments are exported for sale overseas, and much of it is sold in North America. So, the footage from Peter's video includes German shepherds and golden retrievers, and defenseless tabby and Siamese cats were strung up by their legs or tails and skinned alive. Their fur is often labeled as Asian jackal, rabbit, or raccoon fur and sold to unwitting consumers all around the world. So that's a consumer alert for people who also, unwittingly buy fur trim on their coats. And which winter is coming up, and do we know it from a little bit of rain in Vancouver today? And over to you, Marge.
Thanks, Carl. We now have Peter Fricker, who is the project coordinator for the Vancouver Humane Society, on the line. Hello, Peter. Welcome to Animal Voices.
Hi. Thanks, Marge.
Nice to have you back. Now, I know that you have a project underway right now regarding the Abbotsford Rodeo, and it's been getting a lot of coverage in the media, especially a poster that the society have presented in various places, and even getting a lot of coverage in, not only paid ads, but also from the media in general. I know I read in the Globe and Mail an article about it. Will you please tell us about this poster?
Yes, certainly. What our objective has been in terms of rodeo is, first of all, we wanted to capitalize on the success of our campaign with the Cloverdale Rodeo, in which they ultimately agreed to drop four roping events, which we believe are the most inhumane events in rodeo. That includes calf roping, which many people find offensive and believe is inhumane. We wanted to capitalize on that, and we looked at another rodeo happening this year, which is the Mighty Fraser Rodeo in Abbotsford. And we wrote to the organizers of that rodeo asking them if they would follow Cloverdale's example and drop those events, and we had no reply. So we went ahead with a campaign to try and convince people in Abbotsford to take a hard look at rodeo in moral terms. And we decided to take a very specific approach concerning the Christian community in Abbotsford. As your listeners will know, there's a large Christian community in that area. We thought it would be an interesting and fair question to put before Christians in Abbotsford, really asking them whether Christian values were compatible with what happens in rodeos. And so we had a poster designed and an ad designed, identical ad designed, and that appeared this week in the Abbotsford Times, one of the newspapers in Abbotsford. And it got quite a reaction. I'd say it was a mixed reaction. Some people were surprised and found it inappropriate to be using a figure like Jesus on this issue. But we also got a very positive reaction from some people who thought that it was an important moral and philosophical question to raise amongst Christians in the area. So now we're really just waiting to see what kind of an impact it will have.
Yes, I read in the Globe and Mail statement by the dean of the Vancouver School of Theology, and I must say I found it very positive. He mentioned that there are numerous places in Scripture where cruelty is not acceptable. To hurt someone or something solely for one's pleasure, or when one knows something something is suffering as a result of this action, then one is obliged to cease. And certainly we can see suffering on the animals, can't we, in the rodeo?
Yes, in our view, there's absolutely no doubt that animals suffer from pain and distress and fear in rodeos, and there's plenty of graphic photographs and video footage to prove that. The question, therefore, is how can you be a Christian and support that kind of cruelty? And obviously there are Christian cowboys. There is, in fact, quite a large Christian cowboy movement which has come up from the United States. And that's what we wanted to draw attention to, the incompatibility, in our view, of Christian values like mercy and compassion with what happens in rodeo, which is really all about brutality and domination of animals, all for the sake of entertainment. It's not about producing food or raising farm animals. It's for the trivial entertainment of human beings that these animals have to suffer.
Yes, I like the Dean Leggett's comment about the poster, saying, what would Jesus do is the question on the poster, and he said it's precisely the right question that people should be considering. What would Jesus do with this rodeo going on? And, of course, the poster also shows the cruelty inflicted upon the animals in rodeo. So it is a very, engaging poster, and I think that one that will start a lot of thought, and I hope it will, amongst people on broader issues about the animals and the cruelty we inflict upon them so readily.
Exactly. I mean, even though it's the question is put specifically to Christians in Abbotsford, it obviously applies to non-Christians who hold those values of compassion and mercy. And we've given examples in some of the discussions we've had of Christian evangelists in the past who have taken on social issues. Probably the most famous would be William Wilberforce, who really led the campaign to end the slave trade in the 19th century. What a lot of people don't know is that he also founded the first SPCA in the 1830s. And he obviously believed that as an evangelical Christian, he thought that Christians had a duty to extend mercy and compassion not only to other human beings but to animals as well. And he almost single-handedly founded the animal welfare movement that has spread around the world since then. So really the point we were trying to make is that what about Christians today? Surely they could look to William Wilberforce as a model and look at issues that are taking place in our society, such as animal welfare, and apply that question about is it correct to apply mercy and compassion beyond human beings and to animals as well.
Yes, that opens the whole question of spirituality and animals, doesn't it? Do animals have souls? This kind of thing. Occasionally these questions do come up among concerned people. But I think that maybe we're ready for those kinds of discussions in our society, because people are becoming more aware of the animals, and a lot of people think animals have rights, and that's where I stand. Carl, do you have a question?
Yes, the Vancouver Humane Society has been enormously successful with roping in the Cloverdale Rodeo. Now, I find it curious that this Abbotsford Rodeo is called Mighty Fraser Rodeo. Yeah. And this aspect of might and might overwrite, you know, is daunting. But what I wanted to ask you was that maybe you can just, Marge's been talking about the roping of the calves being one of the key issues which you of interest as far as animal cruelty is that you're zeroing in on.
Yes.
But they said here in this Vancouver Sun article, it said it is not the roping that's the problem, it's how they handle it once it's roped. Maybe you can give us a little description of what actually happens there. You know, I haven't been to a rodeo for 45 years.
Right. Well, this is very typical in the debate that we have with the people who defend rodeo, which is mostly the rodeo promoters and the people behind this industry. And they often claim that there are various rules to protect the animals and that they care about the animals as much as anyone else and so on and so forth, that they're very valuable, that they are athletes and so on. And what they neglect to point out is, first of all, the animals have no choice as to whether they participate in rodeo or not.
Right.
So they're not athletes in the sense of human athletes who can decide whether they want to take a take on a sport.
More victim than athlete, I would say.
Exactly. They just don't have the choice about whether they want to take that risk. The other thing they of course don't mention is that there are various devices and techniques used to make the animals do what they do. For example, flank straps on bulls and horses are used to make them buck. There is tail twisting that takes place in the chutes to force the to make the calves come shooting out, you know, in pure fear, really, out into the arena at full speed. They wouldn't be doing that of their own accord. And then, of course, they are lassoed at high speed, and even if it's done correctly in cowboy terms, there's a terribly high risk of injury and certainly pain. And even all of that aside, one of the things we often point out is that even if the animals are not injured or not even suffering pain, they certainly suffer fear and distress. And it's the opinion of some experts, someone called Temple Grandin in particular, and she is not an animal rights activist by any stretch of the imagination. She actually designs slaughterhouses, but she knows how animals react, and she says in her writings that fear for an animal can be worse than pain. And if that's true, and we certainly believe it is, then the infliction of this fear on these rodeo animals is cruelty by anyone's measure, I would think.
Right. Thanks for that. Wonderful. And Grandin was here in Vancouver this past week at the World Veterinarian Conference. Over to you, Marge.
Mm-hmm. Yes. There are an awful lot of rodeos in Canada. I read there were 56 that are under the auspices of the Canadian, what is it? There's a group that Canadian Professional Rodeo Association.
Now,
and these are 56 rodeos that actually give points to the cowboys, mm-hmm. and which is very significant, isn't it? And interestingly, Cloverdale was one of those that was able to issue points, but they lost that when they eliminated those coolest of events. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, it's interesting to note that even though they are no longer sanctioned by the Rodeo Association, and they are now basically independent, and they no longer have those four roping events, and that's calf roping, steer wrestling, wild cow milking, and team roping, this year they did not suffer a huge loss of attendance as a result. The country fair that went along with the rodeo had large crowds. The event went off very well, and they did not suffer financially because of the dropping of those four cruel events. Mm-hmm. And surely, if they can do it, other rodeos in BC and across Canada could do the same thing. I mean, of course, ultimately, we'd like to see all rodeo phased out and replaced with some other form of heritage entertainment that would still give people some, you know, taste of the Old West and nostalgia and all of that. But we just think it should be done without abusing animals. But it would be a very good and very easy first step for these rodeos to drop those four cruel events.
Right. And the cowboys would lose some status, I guess, wouldn't they, in the world of rodeo, if there were no points awarded? Because isn't that how they get their...
Yeah. It would certainly have to change, but I know that the cowboys that competed in the remaining events at Cloverdale, they made big money prizes.
Oh, they did. Okay. Well, I suppose the gate, whatever the admissions bring in, goes partially at least to the cowboys, huh?
I'm not really sure how the funding works or where the money comes from, but that is something. The other thing people should remember about all rodeos is that it is not, as the rodeo industry will tell you, all about heritage. It's about money. It's a very big business. It's profit motivated, and when those cowboys go out to compete, they're out to win money, and it's under a great deal of time pressure, and the result of all of that is risk to the animals.
Yes, all of those eliminated events, I believe, were timed, weren't they? Timed events.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, and that's what that just increases the cruelty that much more.
It does, pressure. And it's the thing that makes it completely different from what would happen in normal ranch work. Mm-hmm. The the roping of calves on a ranch is usually because the animal is injured or sick, and they want to get control of it so that it can be seen by a vet or attended to. Well, they certainly wouldn't rope it in the same way you would in a timed event in a rodeo, which I'm sure you've seen involves the calf running at high speed and being jerked back to a full stop in the most brutal way. Well, you wouldn't be doing that with an animal that you were actually trying to attend to deal with an injury or an illness.
Right. Now, Peter, are there other rodeos in this area, like in the Lower Mainland?
They're all over B.C. I suppose the next closest one to the Lower Mainland would be in Chilliwack.
Oh, I see. So the Vancouver Humane Society has a lot of work ahead of it in that area, I guess, huh?
Absolutely. I think it's a key issue that Cloverdale made this first step because it set a precedent. And we know that it sent shockwaves throughout the rodeo industry all through North America. And the other thing we know in our research is that even amongst rodeo people, rodeo fans, there is a lot of very soft support for the roping events, in particular calf roping. In other words, even people who like rodeo, many of them feel uncomfortable with calf roping. Mm-hmm. So we think it's an appropriate objective to have, is to try and get that eliminated, and along with those other roping events.
Could very well be to the advantage of the remaining events in the rodeo, couldn't it? Get rid of the very cruel ones.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Any points we haven't made, Peter, that you'd like to bring up?
I suppose just that for anyone who thinks that maybe this wasn't the right approach that we've taken with the ad and the poster, that is invoking the name of Jesus, we wanted to make it clear that a lot of thought went into this in an effort to ensure that we were not going to be offensive to Christians or Christianity or about Jesus. Mm-hmm. We have practicing Christians on our board, on our staff, and amongst our volunteers and supporters, and we did consult with some of them when we were developing the poster, and to ensure that we weren't just doing a cheap stunt and using in Jesus' name to attract attention. What we wanted to do was raise a very legitimate theological and philosophical question about Christian values and about what happens at rodeo, and I hope people will appreciate that.
That's a very good point. And your responses that you have received so far have mainly been positive, haven't they?
It's been mixed. We've had some people who have been unhappy about it, and we've tried to explain our position to them, and some people who have applauded it. One of the interesting things that has happened is that we've been contacted by a number of radio stations across Canada, in particular in the prairies, and a number of Christian radio stations. For example, this afternoon I've been asked to participate in a discussion on a Christian radio station out of Los Angeles. So obviously it's something of interest to Christians as well as to a general audience interested in the issue of rodeo.
That's wonderful. I'm glad to hear that. Well, Peter, I'd like to say thank you so much for being on Animal Voices. We really appreciate it when you engage in our program. And good luck with your projects.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes, and you're listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM. And we're going to go over to Alan Jensen, and do you have some music for us? And sure.
Previous interview was with Peter Fricker, who is the project coordinator for the Vancouver Humane Society.
Yes, and many of our programs are listed on our webpage, animalvoices.org, and posted there. So even today's program, you can hear it. It'll be posted within a few days. So one item of interest that came in the news this week is that Parks Canada has declared success in its cull of double-crested cormorants this spring in on Middle Island, just off Pele Island on Lake Erie. And I think, well, we still got the music going there, Alan. So that's great. And thank you for that rodeo music there, Alan. So anyway, shortly we'll be speaking with Jerry Cook. He's with the World Orchard Project. And one other item that I thought was of great interest is also that Liberation BC will be marching in the 30th. That's a great organization that is making great progress in protesting things like fatty livers from ducks, foie gras. And they will be marching in the 30th Vancouver Pride Parade. So people are invited to join them and help spread the word and show your support for the end of exploitation and discrimination of all kinds.
Co-op Radio will be in the Pride Parade also.
Right.
Not so surprisingly.
Well, and also then there's going to be on the 9th of August outside the Vancouver Art Gallery, there's going to be the, it's the 25th annual Animal Rights Day. So between 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. on August the 9th, coming up soon, and we'll be mentioning next week's Animal Voices, outside the art gallery on Robson Street, we'll be celebrating with many other Vancouver groups, like Canadians for the Ethical Treatment of Food of Food Animals, Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection Society, and Vancouver Humane Society, and all these groups will be there, and you're invited to visit them. Well, Jerry Cook lives on the Outer Banks coastline of North Carolina. He's the co-founder of the World Orchard Project, and he's a former board member of EarthSave International. He's a nutritional lecturer, musician, and storyteller. Welcome to Animal Voices, Jerry.
Hey, Carl.
Hey, it's good to hear from you. I must tell people you're a longtime friend and faithful friend, and you've done so much to help animals, and now you're involved with the World Orchard Project.
Yeah.
And so maybe you can just tell us a bit about that.
Well, the World Orchard Project is primarily just a positive approach to trying to do something not only for humans but also non-human animals and for the environment. And basically what we're doing is hands-on work as well as a lot of promotion and education into going out and trying to encourage people, groups, to plant fruit-bearing trees and bushes, especially into the what we call the common areas of the world where people got free access to go into, whether it be parks or school grounds or parking lots or whatever, you know, in right-of-ways on your own property out near the street, where you can grow some fruits and veggies, and if anybody is hungry, they got something to eat. What inspired me is the knowledge I've had for quite a while in trying to think of something I could really do about it that was almost 100% effective, and that was planting fruit-bearing trees and bushes in common areas. And why is because there are 45,000 people that starve to death every 24 hours on this planet. And 38,000 to 40,000 of them are children. Well, bless the children. You know, we need to feed them if we could bring them into the world. We can probably do with less adults, but heck, let's feed them anyway.
That's so wonderful that these common areas, and we should zero in on the fruit trees that are just a wonderful legacy that people can leave.
Yeah.
You know, and it came to mind today how you know, not only would be with fruit trees and berry-bearing trees, shrubs, we feed the animals, we feed humans, we feed the animals. But in many ways, I discovered that, you know, the raccoons climb into the fruit trees and they drop them on the ground. And there's other animals like skunks, and they eat the ones that fall on the ground because they can't climb trees.
Right.
So it's a wonderful circle of magic.
Yes, it is. It's the way nature intended for the food chain to operate. What I'm told, I haven't been there to count them, but in the rainforest, what little we got left, that there are 2,500 varieties of fruits, edible fruits, in the rainforest. You know, and if you go into a school classroom and say, "Can anybody name five fruits?" They'd be lucky to name five. You know, it'd be apples and oranges or something like that, you know, maybe pears.
Now, that's 2,500 varieties in the deep rainforest. I think that's per square kilometer.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's just incredible because, you know, I spent some time in Sumatra with the rehab, and, of course, there were people wanting to find out which of these incredible variety of plants and fruits and berries the orangutans were eating and were studying their feces.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, Jane Goodall spent her life basically studying our nearest neighbor, which is the great ape, and that gets into the raw food thing. Of course, they eat everything raw. I've yet to find where a deer or a wild animal hides their microwaves or their stoves or whatever. You know, they just eat what nature supplies in its whole form, you know?
Now, Jerry, you also, in one of your in the CV here, it says that, you know, this whole movement of you teach nutrition, you're doing it with humor, with fun, with music. And you've been doing it for a long time.
Well, I've been trying, Carl. You know, I decided many years ago that I was probably on this earth for a while because, actually 54 years ago, 1954, I was given up for dead by the medical profession. I got blown up and burnt 65% of my body third degree. And back in 1954, it was almost unheard of that anybody survived something like that. Fortunately, I was probably too dumb to die. I was 9 years old. But, my brother, he didn't make it. He was burnt beside me. He didn't last but 6 hours. And that was quite a message in that. Some of his last words out of his mouth as we were laying there, both dying together, was, "I don't want to die." And that led me to understand the real animal rights issues. Is like, I don't care how we treat an animal or a human, you know, if the last thing they do is suffer an unnatural death, to me, that's terror, you know? And I heard it out of my brother. I saw it because I don't even know whether you know, but I was a farmer for 10 years. I was like Howard says, he was a fourth-generation farmer, cattle rancher, feedlot operator. I was a first-generation, and I mainly did it for sustainable farming. And for 10 years, I ran an animal farm and operated it, and we did some actually slaughtering right there on site. And I never had an animal come up to me and said, "It's my time, take me and use me." You know, they all are in horror when we slaughter them, you know.
Right, and so you know, there's Summerfest happens in Philadelphia, in Jonestown, every year, and not many people here know about Summerfest.
In Pennsylvania, yeah, Jonestown, Pennsylvania. Yeah.
So maybe, and you've been going for just absolute record number. You've been there
well, it's not right.
15 times.
This is the first year, I think, since about 91 that I haven't been there in some way, found form.
So maybe it's good to talk about Summerfest and how you've seen the evolvement of the whole, what is Summerfest all about?
Well, Summerfest is basically, it's called Vegetarian Summerfest. And they kind of shy away from getting into too much controversy about animals or animal rights issues. It's more geared around, I guess, toward the health issues, environment. And we touch on animals there, the speakers and the programs. But it's not like an animal rights conference. And it's more, I would say, upbeat and educational and informative. We have doctors that come in, some of the key speakers in the world, John McDougall, T. Colin Campbell has come there. Of course, Howard Lyman is a regular there every year. But people like Harold Brown, who was in Peaceable Kingdom with me, myself, and even Jim Mason, we go there and carry lightly the animal rights issues from time to time. But it's like, I think this past year, that what I'm told, they had over 600 people. I know they did the year before, and a lot of them are regulars. And it's like going to a good family reunion where you don't have to be questioned where you get your protein all the time.
And sit down to eat. And that's in Jonestown, Pennsylvania.
Well, they have taken it a couple other places, but normally it's at the University of Pittsburgh, Johnstown campus in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. And a few times, and in the early years, they were at other venues. They even came to North Carolina, to the University of North Carolina in Asheville, back around 2099, somewhere along in there.
Now, Jerry, you once said there's nothing more powerful than song.
Song.
And you know, in the documentary film, Peaceable Kingdom,
yep,
you end it all off with a wonderful song, Amazing Grace. And maybe you could just tell us a story about
Peaceable Kingdom. Let me first say that we opened that movie, Peaceable Kingdom, if you remember. It opens up with you hear some dulcimer music, which is mine in the background. Then they switch to me, and I sing a little crazy song called Boil That Cabbage Down. And, you know, it's upbeat, it's lively, and that message, I'm the bookends. I open it, and then at the end, we close out with Amazing Grace and the story behind Amazing Grace. And I think the energy behind that song, the words to that song, are what made it possibly so powerful. It was written basically by a guy named John Newton. John Newton was at one time a slave ship captain. And once during a trip, when he had a boatload of slaves, you go from England, they go to Africa, they pick up the boatload of slaves, and they took them over to the English colonies in the Americas, and they sell them. And they ran into a violent storm in the Atlantic one day. Might have been what we call a hurricane there. And they just knew everything was going to be lost. And John Newton had to even strap himself to the wheel section of the ship, and everybody else went below. And the terror down there that they experienced, not only from the storm, but also having to be down there with the slaves in the condition that they were chained in a hole in, it all changed John Newton's life. And when he got back from that trip, he quit the trade ship business and ended up basically studying the priesthood, became a priest. And it leads up to, you know, it's kind of ironic that today we're on talking about this message, because August the 1st, 1838, should be the most revered date in our history. And the reason why is on that date, the Parliament of Britain, England, that's when they abolished slavery. 800,000 to 900,000 slaves were freed as of act on that day. But you never hear anybody talk about it. Isn't it amazing? And it was 51 years of effort by a fellow named Thomas Clarkson and a few Quakers. He was not a Quaker himself, but the Quakers were the only religion, and they were very minority, that was against slavery at that time. All other religions said, oh, it's okay, you know? And even this started back in like 1778, this movement. And back then, it was estimated that three-fourths of the world population were in some form of slavery or another. And who would have ever thought that that would have changed? And the fellow named William Wilberforce was the politician at the time in the Parliament that helped push that through. But it took 51 years of effort by a small group of people that started, in a little coffee shop or a little tea shop there in London, and it finally did, and they abolished slavery. Those stories give me hope about the way we treat animals today and continue to treat humans.
Now, in those days, they didn't believe that these slaves had a soul either.
Right.
Women didn't have a soul either, did they?
No women had the power of voting. In England at the time, only 1 in 10 men had the right to vote. You had to be a landowner, and no women.
So I'm rooting for this theory, and the Pope has spoken out in that, if humans have a soul, it's also very likely that the animals also have a soul.
Been around any animal at all, whether they could even be out of the same litter, cats or dogs, they all have different personalities, you know? They all experience fear, but they all have this unconditional love as well. I don't see where any animal, you know, they don't judge us as being stupid, but I think we sometimes we are the worst species on this planet. You know, we're the ones who are destroying it, you know, with our modern day advances.
Now, Jerry, one of the things that's always intrigued me is this distance we have with the animals. Like this article that was in the New York Times on Thursday or Wednesday, I'm not quite sure, but it was about a farm boy that reflects. And did you read that article?
Yes, I did. I briefed it.
And you know, this was about, he writes that in a world in which animal rights are gaining ground, it's nice to know that animal rights are gaining ground, that people are becoming aware, barbecue season should make me feel guilty. My hunch is that in a century or two, our descendants will look back on our factory farms with uncomprehending revulsion. But in the meantime, I love a good burger. And you responded to that to me and with a very comment. Maybe you can repeat that.
Well, I can't remember word for word what I'm saying. But
you know what you said? Jerry, you said, this is, you know, this whole disconnect, you know, that yeah. Here is a person talking very passionately about the animals, and then he says... in that disconnect, you reflect on it and you say he is living proof of just how barbaric our society is.
Absolutely. You know, have we changed much in 2,000 years, Carl? 2,000 years ago, the people, what people wanted to do for entertainment back then was watch the gladiators, you know, go at each other, the Christians being fed to the lions. The stadiums would fill up to watch that barbaric stuff. So what's the number one watch spectator sport today? They're all violent stuff. It was pro wrestling. I think this ultimate fighting there where they put guys in cages and pound on each other to submission is probably equalizing in attendance or in viewing a pro wrestling. And then you have these shows on that I never watch, but, you know, you can't help but run by them, Cops. You know, watching the police beat up on people. And you got all these animated violence movies like Star Wars, Terminator, Die Hard, Indiana Jones. They fill up the movie theaters to watch these things. But, you know, I reflect back when I think about that, and I'm like, well, gee, it's programming. We've never talked about this, but I'm actually a board-certified hypnotherapist with a minor also in psychology and sociology. So I'm trying to study what makes us what we are. And I think our first few years of life are probably our real programming in as far as our beliefs. I think our addictions that we can overcome, one of the most difficult is our early instilled belief system. And I think back what TV came into being when I was a kid. I was about 5, I think, when we got a TV, or 6 years old. But I remember the programs that came on that seemed so innocent, but I look back at them now, they were very violent. The Roadrunner chasing the coyote, Mighty Mice fighting and beating up, cowboys and Indians. So I think violence is taught in us at an early age, and then after we hit maybe after college age, we're almost locked in, especially us stubborn men. You know, women can change quicker than us guys can. But, you know, whether it be the way we treat animals, the way we treat each other, the way we view the world as competitive, not only against our own species but other species, that's really locked in. So my hope, and I really have hope, but my hope is in the children. And that's why I take this World Orchard Project and the group of us who founded that. We try to go into schools and work with the school children on planting trees, and we don't go in there and saying, I've got a vegetarian message or an animal rights message. We go in there and we explain to them, you know, what this fruit-bearing tree or bush can supply the universe. And one of it being the environment. You know, we talk about global warming and we talk about all the things we're doing, but nobody seems to be talking much about the fact that the indigenous trees are being destroyed. It's 90 degrees outside right now where I am down in North Carolina, and out in the sun it's probably registering 110. Well, I can go sit under that shade tree and it'll be 80.
Lovely.
You know, is that if we had the forest that we're in this North American continent as it was when the white people got off the boat 400 years ago, you think we'd be better off or not?
For sure. You know, we're better off with Marge Adams here, that kind lady who has a question for you.
Sure.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Marge.
Most interesting listening to you. Now, you mentioned in the beginning about planting fruit trees and shrubs in order to feed the animals. And that sounds like a wonderful idea in these common areas.
Right.
But I foresee one problem if we came out strongly in favor of that is that we have coyotes, raccoons, skunks in our city. People are discouraged from providing food in any way because that makes them urbanized, and that is to the detriment of the animal ultimately, because he comes into the city and eventually there's a problem and he gets shot.
Why are they coming into the city?
Well, they're coming in for food.
Why don't they have the abundance of food in their own environment? Have we taken their environment away?
Oh, yes, we have. We, as humans are doing throughout the world, we've taken over their habitat.
Yeah.
So that the poor critters there don't have sufficient food, so they do come into the city. But it's more of a problem if we feed them. You know, make a point. Now, have you encountered that problem?
But we're not the only species. Shouldn't we be sharing this planet?
Well, of course we should. But the city itself is concerned about people being injured or somehow.
Yeah, because they only think of people.
That's right.
It's all about
that's
people.
Right.
I remember years ago I was involved in a real estate field and my own real estate corporation, and I tried to be community-minded, and I belong to the Chamber of Commerce locally in Colonial Heights, Virginia. And it's a little isolated town about 20 miles south of Richmond, Virginia, and it's kind of surrounded by a couple rivers on both sides, so they're kind of locked in. They can't expand. And the last area that they developed with housing was a swampy area down on the east side of the town. And when they went into that area and built these high-income houses, well, it just about took the rest of the environment away from nature, including the deer, the white-tailed deer of Virginia. And then years later, the neighbors started complaining about the deer coming into their yards and eating the shrubberies and the trees and the flowers. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to hire a marksman to go out at night and shoot the deer when we had taken away their environment. You know, but the deer didn't hire a marksman to shoot the people who had infringed upon them. Plus, the deer don't understand property lines. The only species that understands property lines and surveys are humans. You know, they have to operate without these concrete boundaries, just die hard in the wool. Well, being the jokester that I am, I sat there across from the mayor, who was a quasi-friend of mine, and they were talking about this issue, and I said, has the attorney from Dinwiddie County, where I resided, contacted you, your attorney today? He said, no, why? I said, because y'all shot a deer last night, and it was determined it wasn't a Colonial Heights City deer. It was one of Dinwiddie County's deers who had crossed the line. So we want restitution for our deer that you killed. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it made them stop and think, and they stopped shooting the deer.
Really? Yeah.
Well, you know, sometimes you just have to put up fences if you don't want wildlife to come into your yard.
You know, I believe what in North Vancouver, where I live, one of the problems is that it's so difficult to teach people not to put their garbage containers out the night before.
Right.
And I think that's it contributes largely to habituated bears. You know,
I love Canada. You know, there's one bear in California, one brown bear. You know where it is?
Tell me.
It's on the flag. Because the people have run the bears out. They're gone. You know, do we want that to happen in British Columbia?
No.
No, I don't think we do. Not, especially y'all folks. But, you know, we have to be careful, you know, what we do and how far we expand into their environment. I don't know. You know, maybe you got a legitimate reason for not planting fruit-bearing trees, but I think the positives outweigh that negative.
Thanks for saying that.
I think maybe for every one we plant in the city, let's go plant two out in their environment so they all have it in
their
environment.
That would be a really good idea.
Yeah.
Ellen has a question.
Hi. Enjoying listening to your interview quite a bit and some of the things you have to say. The organization you're working with is the World Orchard Project. Is that right?
Yeah, www.worldorchardproject.org.
Right, so it's called the World Orchard Project. Are you in touch with or working with people in other parts of the world? And
yeah.
The ideas that you're talking about happening in Asia, in Europe, and other places?
Yeah, there are some sister organizations that are concentrating very heavily into the third world nations. When we got together a few years ago, I called a group of five, four other friends and myself, we got together actually in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, to discuss the possibility of starting this project. I don't want to say it's an organization because I think we got enough organizations in the world now. Gee. So I said, let's make this a project, and we were undecided then rather to just throw our support in toward another organization that's doing similar work, and we couldn't quite narrow down one that we felt like it really resonated with the way we did about this thing. So we went ahead and formed, this project or this group to do it. But at the same time, I don't care who does it, under what name, or whether I even hear the feedback. You know, if I can get one person to think about it and do something, and that person gets two, and that person gets four, you know, I feel like I've done something positive. And my ego doesn't have to be involved in this thing.
Right. Jerry, in closing now, I was wondering if you could, you were a musician, you played the dulcimer.
Yeah.
And, can you give us a tune just briefly here? let's expand your skills.
Do you want it on the dulcimer or my voice?
You got your dulcimer in your hand?
I got one right here. Let me see if I can see if it's halfway tuned.
Let's see how it goes. Jerry, we're listening to Jerry Cook from the Outer Banks of North Carolina.
It's a little bit out of tune, Carl, but we might be able to get something there. You want something upbeat or you want something to...
Up to you.
let's see where we got it. Sing it with me, Carl.
That's great.
How
sweet the sound
that saved a soul like me. I once was lost, but now am found. Was blind, but now I see.
Thank you, Jerry Cook. And you're known as Captain Cook by many people, very affectionately.
Well, we have an A-team. I'll tell you a quick story about that. The A-team is Howard Lyman, Jerry Cook, me, and my friend Matt Kelly, who you know well. And Matt decided that the trio of us, when we were all serving on the Earth Save International board together and just having a ball, enjoying it and meeting you guys up there, doing a great job, that we were the A-team. So Matt and I became captains, and Howard has called me Captain Cook just about ever since we met. I guess my relationship to the real Captain Cook. So knowing Howard had to be at least one step, if not two, above us, so we named him Admiral Lyman.
Admiral
Lyman.
Good. Well, Jerry Cook, you've been on the A-team of Animal Voices for the last 25 minutes, and we thank you for your time.
I thank y'all. Appreciate the good work you guys are doing up there, and y'all living in one of my favorite cities in the whole world, Vancouver. Love it. Stanley Park. I got to get up there to see y'all soon.
Come soon. Bye
for
now.
All right, buddy.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Yes, and you're listening to Animal Voices coming to you on co-opradio.org. Many of our programs are on Animal Voices on our webpage, animalvoices.org. So anyway, we only have a few minutes left. Marge, do you have an announcement there?
Well, this is something that I'm sure you were a part of. It was this bulletin for the Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection Society, which I pull out and read occasionally. I think it's really well done. And this was an upbeat little announcement that you made in on your spring edition, an end to animal testing. That's a question. The use of animals in safety testing of household products, cosmetics, drugs, pesticides, and other chemicals may finally be on the way out. What a blessing that would be. Three U.S. agencies, the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, National Institute of Health, I think it is, NIH, and the National Toxicology Program are collaborating on a revolutionary way of identifying toxic substances. This involves mixing chemicals with cells from different human organs and then detecting early signs of harm, a far faster, more effective, humane approach than animal testing. We need more of that.
Yes, we do. And this it's so enormous. UBC and Simon Fraser University right here in British Columbia are involved with horrendous experiments on animals. And we don't believe that the tests on animals is a good comparison for the humans, where we have even humans from different races reacting to differently to different drugs and experiments.
I think most people don't have any idea just what goes on and how many animals, how many millions, because it's millions, it's just an incredible number, are used in animal testing and the basic uselessness of most of that testing. Anyway, we have about a minute to go, so you're going to have to wrap things up.
Well, I've got from Diana Jewell, I've got a spread the stupidity notice here, and she said, only in North America do drugstores make the sick walk all the way to the back of the store to get their prescriptions, while healthy people can buy cigarettes at the front. And she says, only in North America do people order double cheeseburgers, large fries, and a Diet Coke. So here's one that I've noticed very much is only in North America do people use the driveway to park their cars worth thousands of dollars, and they put their useless junk in the garage. Well, it's been a pleasure being here, and I'll finish off by thanking you for listening. And with our beginning of our program, we made a statement that I said, I'm convinced that we are only beginning to comprehend our fellow creatures. I don't believe that man is a superior animal. Yes, we are animals, but is one amazing being among a world of many others. See you next week. Have a happy long weekend.